Hey there, I'm Rick Nelson, and we're talking Winter Ops with Sandy Sauter, and this is episode 92. Why is that snowplow pink? Now, you might think by the title of this episode that Sandy and I are talking about equipment, and that could be the case, because Sandy's the Deputy Director of Operations there at the Maryland State Highway Administration, which does encompass maintenance and the fleet. But actually, the conversation is a continuation of our last episode, number 91. Sandy and I are having this conversation about a synthesis that the No Boundaries Pooled Fund commissioned regarding workforce recruiting and retention. One of the interesting dynamics in play these days is that with the limited workforce, applicants are interviewing us as employers as much or even more than we're interviewing them as potential employees. It's not enough to put an advert in the newspaper and hope somebody will apply. We need to make a compelling case why they should choose us. And secondly, we can't afford to neglect any segment of the pool of potential applicants out there. Now, I don't want to give away too much about this, so I'll stop at that. Anyway, we're talking Winter Ops with Sandy Sauter, and this is episode 92. Why is that snowplow pink? Right after this. Talkin' Winter Ops is the podcast about all things associated with responding to severe weather, and it's brought to you by the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as SICOP. This technical service program focuses on all things winter maintenance and severe weather, from equipment and chemicals to strategies and tactics, to road weather management, and even the terminology we use to communicate with each other. The Winter Weather Management TSP, like all the other AASHTO TSPs, is supported by like-minded state DOTs who value the contribution we're making in achieving their winter and severe weather mission. These states make an annual contribution of $4,000 to keep the Winter Weather Management TSP in business, and I want to send out a special thanks to all those states who support us. You make this podcast possible. So, Sandy, we were just together at the Maintenance Committee's annual meeting this past July. There were tons of presentations. There were at least four presentations that dealt with workforce. And you and Heath Patterson from Mississippi did a presentation on a No Boundaries synthesis that looked at innovative strategies for recruiting and maintaining workers. And that was a great presentation. And I think it's just such a huge problem across all the DOTs, right? And I think when it comes to workforce, the Maryland DOT is going to have an issue here in the near future too, aren't they? Trying to fill this position that is Sandy Sauter?
Yes, very soon. So yeah, December.
Yeah. So what's your history with the Maryland DOT, Sandy?
So I started 36 years ago, and I was 10.
I was going to say, you must have been an early preteen.
Yeah, I was 10. So anyway, I started 36 years ago, and how I came to the Maryland, we call it State Highway Administration in Maryland. So it's part of the Department of Transportation, but it's still the State Highway Administration. So okay. I started 36 years ago, just out of high school, answered an ad in the newspaper. It was for a clerical position at one of the maintenance shops or garages. And I stayed in the maintenance shop. I think I was there for 7 years before I transferred over to the central office and then did some different things in the central office. It's the Office of Maintenance. And ultimately, in my position now as the Deputy Director of Operations. So I have highway maintenance under me and fleet management under me.
Wow. So you started in a maintenance garage and now you're the head person.
One below the person for maintenance. Yeah.
I'm trying to give you a promotion here just before you leave, right? You know, I suspect that when you hired on, when you answered that ad, the way the highway agency worked those days with recruiting and hiring and so on is changed so much from then to now?
Absolutely. Because like I said, it was an ad in the paper. And I do remember what my mom had said to me. She gave me two pieces of advice. One was, you better make sure they're not putting you out on the road. So I'm 18 years old. She said, you better make sure they're not putting you out on the road. And it's like, okay, well, they're not. I'm just working in the office. But I'm okay with going out on the road. I don't think it's that big a deal. But, you know, 36 years ago, maybe it wasn't that big a deal. And the second piece of advice was, I think it's kind of funny, and this might not be something that you want to make to the podcast, is don't use this state highway as a dating service. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, no, why would you even say that? But those were her two pieces of advice for my career with the State Highway Administration, the DOT. So,
well, you know, I suspect there weren't very many women in the workforce 36 years ago, and particularly even in maintenance, right?
Absolutely not. So we did, at the particular shop or garage that I worked in, we had one female, one other female besides me, and she was in supply. Actually, you know what? We had two. Sorry about that. We had two females besides me. One was a clerical person doing any, you know, the admin, the payroll, that sort of thing, and then someone else who was in supply. The woman that was in supply, she actually had worked out on the road before coming into the office. So, but no, there weren't that many. Occasionally we had some summer students come in that were female, and summer students, meaning they were on break from college. They came in, they worked on the road, you know, they did what the regular road workers were doing. But that was it. That was it.
Pretty stereotypical roles, though, right?
Absolutely.
So that brings us to this No Boundaries study. I think everybody should have a pretty good idea about what No Boundaries is. You know, we did the national briefing, you know, just this year, and Heath Patterson did an outstanding job of explaining what No Boundaries was or is. But you all, as a pooled fund, took it on yourself to go do a synthesis on recruiting and retention.
Yes, sweet. We did that. Diana Klonch and Associates, she was, secured by No Boundaries, and her group did a study about recruiting and retention.
So as a group, you know, when you were deciding to do this synthesis, what were some of the discussions that went on before you launched into the synthesis and how you decided what you wanted to look at?
So we're all struggling with recruiting employees. And some of this had to do with the pandemic, but some of it is just the nature of the business. It's difficult to find people who want to work for the transportation departments, who want to work out on, you know, work out on the road. We are all struggling with that. And it's no secret. We're not notoriously paying high bucks for this type of work. But it's super important work. And we were struggling getting people. All of the DOTs were experiencing the same thing. And it was a common discussion, meeting after meeting after meeting. And it's like what are some of the DOTs doing that is helping with their recruitment efforts? That maybe, so say in Maryland, we were doing one thing, but then we could learn by something that was happening in Colorado or something that was happening in California or Louisiana, that we could learn some of those other things in hopes that we could employ those in addition to what we were already doing at the Maryland DOT.
Yeah, I know. It's like you can't hardly get two people together that the conversation doesn't turn to workforce. You know, in my time, we always had struggle, you know, trying to find people, particularly with those snow plowing positions. You know, it's a tough job. you know, it's a terrible hours and you're out there when the weather's bad and everything. So it's always been a problem, but it seems like lately it has just really intensified. I mean, in the past, we could get a few people applying for these jobs and there were folks that came back year after year. It's like now you put an announcement out and it's like there are no applicants.
Yes. That's what we're struggling with, that we've got. So in some areas of the state that we'll have, we might get one or two people applying and we need to fill 20 positions. So the candidate pool doesn't seem to be there as it had been in the past.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the CDL requirements, I think, really complicate the situation because, you know, these are skilled workers, right? They're in expensive pieces of equipment and, you know, they've got the name of the state on the door, right? And so their actions touch the customer every single day. And so when you throw that CDL requirement on there and the competition for those drivers, it really becomes difficult.
It absolutely does.
So what kind of things, as you're talking with your peers, now it's my understanding that there's about 20 states that belong to the No Boundaries, and the synthesis sort of looked at that membership to see what everybody was doing. What kind of stood out for you?
So they're just... some of the states had different, they had the ability to do different things. And, you know, you probably heard just making fun of what Colorado is able to do in their state. And yeah, I was poking fun at John Lormay and that they're able to do different things, different perks. Not every state has those same opportunities. Yeah. We can only pay them so much, but like there were some states who were able to, based on the location, maybe they were able to give more money for if they were in a metropolitan area or that sort of thing, or if they were in an area with a really high vacancy rate, that they may have been able to do a couple extra things. I know, like in Maryland, we're hosting lots of one-day recruiting events where we're trying to bring everybody who might be interested in working in a particular location, bring them all in, maybe we can do background checks on site. We can do interviews on site so that we are reducing the time from interview to when they can actually come to work and start getting a paycheck. And I think a lot of the states were having difficulty with their the background check process, the process of bringing someone on board. If it takes longer than a month, I don't know who wants to wait that long to be told that, hey, you're hired and you can start in 2 weeks and you'll start getting a paycheck. I know when I was hired, 36 years ago, but as I was walking, it's kind of funny, as I was walking, like I'm done the interview, and the man says, okay, so you got the job. And I'm like, what? and I said to him, wait, are you sure? What if somebody else comes? Like, this is my, how I'm walking out of the building. Okay, you got the job. Mm-hmm. We'll give you some paperwork. And I'm thinking, like, this was my first real interview, my forever in my life, first interview. And
is this how they really go, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what if somebody better comes in? That's actually what I said to the man who hired me. And he's like, no, you have the job. And I'm like, oh, wow. And I had to drive, no cell phones, whatever, drive home. And I tell my parents and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got the job. And I'm so excited. But people now, and we're competing with companies like, I think Amazon is, hey, come today and we'll hire you today. We'll give you a paycheck today. That's not mm-hmm. how government works. So just anything that we can do to reduce that time from interview to actually working and getting a paycheck, earning money is of benefit. So again, there were a lot of things that the different states were able to do. And, you know, I understand not every state has those same flexibilities or same right. opportunities to do it. I would encourage the listeners to this to go and look at that synthesis and just see and start like picking and choosing things that could possibly work within the parameters that you have in your agency.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you're as a government agency, I mean, you're bound by personnel rules and procedures and processes and all of that. And I mean, those have been developed over years and might not necessarily match the needs of the workforce that you're trying to recruit from these days.
That's definite. And I know that, so even sometimes some of the older school practices of walking into the facility and filling out a paper application, that may mm-hmm. work for the group of people that we're trying to bring in our doors, as opposed to a QR code or some right. other sort of announcement where they've got to fill out applications online and have email addresses. And it's, I do think that it's important for anybody who is engaging in these recruitment efforts to understand the audience. If the audience yeah. isn't necessarily the most tech savvy, because the ones that maybe are, maybe they don't want to work for us, but if they're the regular people who, I don't know, maybe have worked on a farm and they're looking for a more permanent job with benefits, that they want to fill out a piece of paper. They want to meet the people that like they want to walk in the building yeah. that they're going to ultimately want to work in. Not necessarily filling stuff out online. So I really do think that it's important for the people who are trying to do this recruitment to understand the audience, understand the people that we're trying to pull in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you, it's interesting you mentioned that, Sandy. I was talking with somebody and I wish I could remember who it was, but that's sort of irrelevant. But they were doing interviews, right? And, you know, usually, as the interviewer, you say, okay, well, we'll make our decision. We'll get back to you, you know, whether you're selected or not. You know, these days it's the interviewee that says, well, thanks for the interview. I'll let you know if I'm still interested or not. You know, it's like, you're not doing the interviewing. They're interviewing you to see if they want to come work for you. And I think that's the exact point that you make. You know, they want to come in, they want to look at the shop, they want to look at the facilities. Is this someplace I really want to work? As opposed to, you know, filling out something online and, you know, taking whatever fate gives you, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and that sort of goes to this messaging piece. You know, you mentioned that you saw the job announcement in the newspaper. You know, when I was hired, there was the thing called jobs available, right? It was printed. It was a little booklet that came out once a week and all the jobs were listed in it. You know, now with online and social media and all of this, were there any kind of interesting things that you saw in this synthesis about how folks are reaching out to the potential workforce to sort of build this body of applicants, this pool of applicants?
So, I'm not sure that there was anything that necessarily, well, actually, you know what? Never mind. There were some things. There were some things. Mm-hmm. And some of the states were were developing a partnership with the high schools. And maybe they were going to their career days. Or they were going to their Votex and they were having conversations. So the people who are in the vocational education programs, those probably aren't the ones who are going to college. Or they may not be the ones who are going to college. That those are the people that maybe we're looking for. So that is, that's good in some respects to be developing these relationships. There were some who were doing, again, along the lines of with the Votech programs, that they were doing apprentice programs. So say with the mechanics that are in the Votech programs, that offering people, that's what we're doing in Maryland. Like we've not started it yet, but we are embarking on that, that we've got some relationships with the Votex and we're bringing in apprentices, gives them the opportunity to learn, you know, real world, gives them an opportunity to see what our culture is, to see if maybe they want to work for the DOT when, after they've graduated. But if, you know, even if they don't want to work for us, we've taught them some valuable skills, that sort of thing. I do want to comment about that type of recruitment efforts. And this was a statistic that I actually heard at that AASHTO Committee on Maintenance meeting that really surprised me, that somewhat makes me think that we may actually be going about this the wrong way. So this statistic, this statistic that I heard was that over the next 12 years, there are fewer 18-year-olds entering the workforce. Okay. So fewer. So as a result of the, I think it was the Great Recession in 2008, parents stopped having as many children. So there are fewer 18-year-olds and there will be fewer 18-year-olds for the next 12 years entering the workforce. So
interesting. Well, that, yeah, so the pool is collapsing, right? The yes, pool is shrinking.
Yes. So if there were 100 and, you know, just if there were 100 18-year-olds who were either deciding, do I want to go to college? Do I want to enter the workforce? Do I want to join the service? Whatever. There are now fewer. There's no more. There's not 100 anymore. So we're now trying to draw from a smaller pool. And that having, knowing that statistic means that maybe we should be trying other recruiting efforts. Maybe we should be aiming for, like right now, aiming for the 25-year-olds who might be getting off their parents' insurance, you know? I mean, so you think about that, that, you know, if there are, we're looking for 25-year-olds and maybe they're not thinking like, oh, I don't need insurance, but you, let's just say you worked with your motor vehicle administration. So back during the pandemic, in Maryland, we had our motor vehicle administration. We asked them to send out notices to all the CDL holders in Maryland, send out notices, that said the MDOT, State Highway Administration, Maryland DOT State Highway Administration is hiring. We need CDL drivers. I know I got one. I have a CDL. And so I got that letter and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. So this is what we're doing now. That maybe we should be going to the 25-year-olds with an announcement that that doesn't say, you know, oh, we're hiring, an announcement that says, hey, you got to get off your parents' insurance. We got insurance, you know, or
it's because it's a marketing thing, right? You've got to market yourself. People aren't standing at your front door, knocking to get in to be a snowplow driver. You've got to go sell yourself.
Well, we'll train you. We'll train you. Like we got insurance. Come with us. Maybe you don't need insurance, but what about the baby that you're going to have in the next year or so? The baby needs insurance. And that's, it's different ways of doing some of the marketing for what is a limited pool.
Right. Right. You know, so I was like scanning through some of the things that came up in the synthesis. And one of the things that sort of struck me was this thing that they're doing in Louisiana. It's hosting the Second Chance Career Fairs.
Yes.
What's that all about? What's the Second Chance Career Fair?
So I believe that they, you know, so I don't know all the intricacies of all the different, like what each of the states is doing. It's Stephen Sibley. He's the, I guess, the Louisiana maintenance manager. He's talked with us about how they're the former prisoners, that they're giving them a second chance.
Oh,
to,
okay.
You know, entering into society, that sort of thing. I know in Maryland, we have inmates who work for us out on the road, like they're picking up litter and that sort of thing. In Maryland, mm-hmm. we have rules that may prevent someone who was formerly incarcerated from actually working for us. But I think that program is still new to Louisiana. And I don't recall Stephen saying, just giving information about how well that's working. But it's certainly one of those things to consider, that they're, if they really don't want to go back to prison, which I right. can't imagine that someone would want to, but you know, if they really don't want to go back, we're offering jobs and
here's a pathway, right?
Yes. That they're really, you know, they're really mindful of showing up on time and being a good employee. So if that works, if that's working for Louisiana, that's yay for them.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting we talk about this, Sandy, because we've got a podcast planned in the very near future with the folks from the city of Columbus. You remember our good pal Scott Lucas,
yes,
who is still helping me produce the podcast. You know, he transitioned over to the city from the Ohio DOT to the city of Columbus, and they have a program that does something very similar to that. So we're going to get their HR director on to talk about the second chance pool of applicants that may be out there and available.
So one of the greatest benefits, I believe, of the No Boundaries Pooled Fund study is that we do have these opportunities to meet with our counterparts in the other states and have these conversations about what's working for them. And just, you know, again, taking little bits and pieces that might be beneficial for, you know, for us, for use in our own states.
Right. Now, when you made your presentation, when you and Heath made the presentation there at the Committee on Maintenance meeting, it was sort of interesting because you were doing all the talking and Heath was sort of standing next to you and as the support person. I can't remember if Heath actually ever said anything other than, yeah, that's right, Sandy.
Heath talked. You can't get him to not talk. That's like saying trying to get me to not talk. So,
well, you had me at pink snowplows, so. and I think one of the interesting things in the No Boundaries synthesis was a lot of discussion about the non-traditional workforce, right? Diversity in the workforce. And, you know, you're certainly a poster child for that. For that diversity coming in 36 years ago and going from a garage to a deputy division administrator or
director.
I can't remember your
deputy director.
Deputy director.
Yeah.
Deputy director.
Yes.
Everybody's organized just a little bit differently. Deputy director. I, you know, I think that whole career ladder might not exist today. And it may be particularly difficult when you think about things through the diversity lens. Talk about that just a little bit about how you see, you know, women in the maintenance workforce.
So can I talk about the pink plows?
Yeah, okay. Yes, you can.
Okay. So I attended an APWA conference in Nebraska, and I'm sitting there and I'm listening to, so it's the same person who did the synthesis for the No Boundaries study about recruitment. And so this was Diana Klonch. She's making a presentation and she mentioned a statistic, and the statistic was that there are fewer than 10% of snowplow operators. So this is with the DOTs, municipalities, DPWs, contractors, whatever, fewer than 10% are women. And it's like, huh, okay. So I'm sitting there listening to her presentation. I send an email to someone back at our agency and I'm like, da 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 da. Can you tell me how many female operators we have? So while I'm waiting for that information, there's more information that's being presented. And there was a picture of a snowplow in one of the slides of Diana's presentation. And the snowplow had like flowers on it. It looked like it was like a community event where maybe they brought children into the DOT. They let them use chalk to color a snowplow. And I'm
This is the blade. This is the blade
yes,
part,
I'm sorry.
Right?
Yes,
the plow blade
not
part,
the truck.
Right? Yeah.
Not the truck.
Okay.
Just the blade. Just the blade, the mold board, whatever. Yeah. So anyway, they're just, you know, these little kids had drawn on it. There's little flowers and stuff. What little kids would draw? Typical things that little kids would draw. Stick figures, that sort of thing. So while I'm waiting on the information about, and I'm still listening to this presentation, but while I'm waiting for the information about how many female snowplow operators we have, I send a text message to the fleet manager. And yes, he does work for me, but my text message to him was, hey, can we paint the plows? Again, the plows, the things that are actually pushing the snow, not the truck. Can we paint the plows any color? And his response was, sure, would you have in mind? And
now that was his mistake, right?
Well,
asking Sandy,
no,
what did you have in mind?
Right? So it was right. Again, that's, you know, like I said, he does work for me. So anyway, it was, sure, would you have in mind? And my response to him was pink, but hear me out. And I told him that I thought that it was an opportunity to market the profession to women. And instead of him coming back with, oh, I don't know if we can do that or whatever, like all this other stuff, he sends me the Pantone colors in a text message, the Pantone colors. And he said, I was thinking one of these, like, you know, like between 230 or 240, like those Pantone colors. That's what he sent me. And I'm like, wow, okay. So we might get some traction with this effort. And I picked out a color and it was more. So in Maryland, I think that it may be the case in some of the other DOTs. We have these emergency signs and they're more like a bright pink, salmon-y color. It was more color. It wasn't like a baby pink although like Admirable Causes, like the breast cancer pink, it wasn't like that. It was just this bright pink color. And my idea behind that was to try to change the narrative about what's a female occupation versus a male occupation. And whether it's right or wrong, we have standard gender-based jobs. And no one argues that, you know, and what the result of no one arguing these standard gender-based jobs is that women don't pursue male-dominated professions and men don't pursue female-dominated professions. Truck driving happens to be one of them. And mm-hmm. so it, the idea behind it, so in Maryland, so I get the results of how many females we have working in our maintenance shops, the ones that are like responsible for snowplow operations, 4%.
4%.
4%.
Way below the average.
Way below the average. And for us, 4%. So we are only responsible. Maryland's a small state. 17,000 lane miles is all that the Department of Transportation is responsible for. So that equates to, we got 25. We got 25 females working in our maintenance garages plowing snow. 25. So what we did is we started asking them, hey, if we get permission to paint the plows, again, the small thing in the front that's pushing the snow.
Right.
If we get permission to paint the plows, are you interested? Would you be interested in having your plow painted pink? So again, we've got 25 of them. We were able to ask 8 of them. And of the 8 of them, 7 of them were like, oh my gosh, I would love to have a pink plow. Can you paint the wing too? And so it was, even though, it, you know, like, and the one was like, hey, I just want to blend in. And it's like, oh yeah, absolutely. We get it. We get it. So they were interested in, basically showing the traveling public, hey, I'm a female and I'm doing this job. And right. I think that there are so many, we've got some stumbling blocks. I don't think that's going to happen. Sadly, I don't think it's going to happen for Maryland for this coming winter. But I think there are so many opportunities to change that narrative about what kinds of jobs women can do. They make up. So I looked up a statistic, Bureau of Labor and Statistics, in 2020, women make up 58% of the workforce, 58. And if 10% across the country is doing snowplow, serving as a snowplow operator, and we're sitting at 4%, we're not trying to recruit 50% of the population. We're missing out on 50% of the population. In Maryland, we actually do train. We train our new recruits, like our new people coming in. We train them to get their CDL. But bus drivers, I believe that the bus drivers are mostly female. They already have a license that we need. We should be going after those people. And if recruitment efforts are not tailored to the different demographics that could possibly come to work for us, again, where I'm saying we're all missing 50% of the population. We are all missing. If we're not trying to do something to get women into our workforce. And I know that there may be some issues with bringing more women, whether it be, you know, more an increase in the number of discrimination cases or sexual harassment, but we have to do something. And
yeah, you know, and that's not a reason it's marketing, you know, like you say, Sandy, it's saying, hey, here's a vocation that is an opportunity for different folks. It's, you know, you don't have to fit this cookie cutter mold to be over here. So it's like that pink plow isn't necessarily calling them out, but it's marketing the fact that
we welcome
here's
women.
A vocation that you might be good at.
Yes,
you know?
We welcome. You had told me, which I thought was interesting, that there are studies that show that women aren't as hard on equipment as men are. I remember.
You know, you really hate to get into stereotypes, right? And speaking in generalities, But, you know, I look at my own personal experiences. And, you know, when I bump up against something, it's like, oh, I've got four-wheel drive. I have four-wheel drive. Right? That's why I have four-wheel drive, so I can go over it, as opposed to, you know, getting out and looking and saying, oh, yeah, maybe maybe I don't want to do that. Let's go around. Right. Let's find another way to get this, to get this thing done. Yeah. So be a little more gentle, you know. Nevertheless, I think that speaks towards this recruiting strategy where you've got to identify your market and you've got to market to them. They're not going to come knock on your door. You're going to have to go knock on their door, which I think is some of the great stuff that's right. that's been called out.
In Maryland, like I said, we've got 25 female operators. And let's just say we painted the plow of 20 of them with the thought that maybe five of them don't want to be recognized, singled out, that sort of thing. And again, it's not about mm-hmm. recognition. It's just about showcasing that the DOT is a female friendly environment. And hey, women can do this occupation too, because if you've got, like I said, 50% of the population simply ruling out a profession in its entirety because it's a male dominated profession, we're missing out. But say, you know, like people who are out on the roads, like maybe we tell them, hey, catch a pink plow in action and be entered for a chance to name the plow next year. And, you know, so then you've got the public looking for these pink plows, which increases awareness of, hey, get away from our plows while we're trying to work, gives them the opportunity to name the plow, obviously a name that has to be approved by a group of people.
Right.
It's hard to tell what, you know, they might come up
an
with.
Appropriate name.
Right,
an appropriate
right, right,
name.
Right, right, right. And, so anyway, maybe that's the next thing. And then the following year, it's like, hey, we now have 30 plows. Spot one of the 30 plows because we've grown our female workforce. And if other states were to join the effort, or contractors or the municipalities, DPWs, it's ultimately, it might end up changing the thoughts about truck driving, this occupation, that it is something for females to consider.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like I say, it's all about marketing to your base. Yeah.
So back to what I had said about all these questions that, like, what if they don't like working here on the road? What if they don't like doing this? What if they... this or that, I do think there are so many what if questions, but, and I don't know the answers to those. And I know in Maryland, we paint our plows every year, other than the stainless right. ones. We paint them every year. If it doesn't work, if there are too many problems, okay, well, we paint them back to black or back to yellow instead of the right. pink. If there are too many problems, but so obviously, I don't have all the answers, but I do know one thing, that if they're not even walking in our door, we have a 0% right. chance of retaining them, luring them with our great benefits, our amazing work culture, our opportunities for advancement or education or learning experiences. We will have a 0% chance of retaining them if they've never walked in our door.
Yep. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always yes. got.
Which is a workforce yeah. of men, which is fine, but we need more people.
Right, right, right. We need more
bodies.
We need more people in plows, right? You know, this whole what if thing, you know, so often you bump into this, you know, every solution has a problem mentality, and it causes paralysis, right? One of the things that came up in your synthesis talks about CDL training, right? CDL, you know, if you can't find drivers, then you need to train them, right? And then, but there's always the folks that say, well, what if they get their CDL and they run off? You know, well, it's like, what if they get their CDL and they don't?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like you've like I said, you've got to be innovative. You got to try something, because if you don't, the, you know what the results you're going
to
get, right?
It's if we, again, if we can't get them to come in the door, we have a 0% chance of retaining them. They never walked in the door.
It's like the basketball guys say, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yes.
And you know, so that sort of brings me around. You mentioned John earlier from Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I just really like John. He's just like always thinking, you know, and it's kind of like, I'm going to keep trying things until they say no, instead of, you know, asking to do things and waiting for an answer.
Yes.
You know, they've done some really innovative things there in Colorado. And I think one of the ones that was brought up in this study has to do with them accepting applications from folks that are not resident. And he was talking about, And then in this instance, he was talking about those maintenance garages out in the eastern part of the state, next to Kansas and Nebraska, right? And it's like the that's where people come from, is over there. And so to discount those folks from another state just because they're not a Colorado resident really limits their pool. And I think that's one of the things that they're talking about. They're in Colorado. And I think it's just, you have to look at it in a different way. You have to look at it through a different lens. And, you know, if you don't try anything, that's guaranteed not to work.
Absolutely. So, and no, in Maryland, because we're a small state, we've got Pennsylvania, Delaware, West Virginia, DC, if we ruled out potential candidates from these other states, we would be in a world of trouble. So we've got a lot of people that come from outside of the state of Maryland. And one of the things that John had also talked about, so, I mean, you still need people to be in close proximity to the garage where they're supposed to respond to. You still need them to be reasonably
close by.
So they're what Colorado is doing. And again, I mean, more power to John for having legislatures that are willing to listen and, you know, address some of these issues. But they do offer some housing for people who are working in certain areas where it's difficult to recruit. And I think all of the DOTs, all of the states have more expensive areas to live in the state than other areas of the state. And not recognizing that and doing something about that and keeping everybody on the same pay scale, that's a recipe for getting people in the areas where you probably don't need them. And, you know, you need to be able to bring them into the areas where maybe they can't live because they can't afford to live there. But you need to have some flexibility with or pay them more. If that's an option in your state, maybe they could be, you know, just a location premium pay.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's what John was saying. You know, it's like, boy, who can afford to live in Vail? But there's still roads there that need to be maintained.
Right.
And, I keep going back to my time in the saddle. You know, it's like we used to provide housing. We provided housing at Lake Tahoe, for example, for that very reason. It's like, who can afford to live at Lake Tahoe? We went through this phase where, you know, we kind of wanted to get out of the landlord business. And it's like, now it's like that, it just sort of goes with the territory. If you want people to be there, you have to facilitate their ability to be there. And whether it's, you know, building, you know, apartments or houses or whatever, it's like, if you want them there, you know, maybe you don't want them there. It's like, I don't know, I have too many directors that'll say, yeah, just let that road, you know, in that ritzy area, you know, let's just let that road snowpack up and we'll get to it when we get to it.
Customers are not going to tolerate that. I want to say that maybe Caltrans had, they had a problem. What they said, and this was just like heartbreaking, that there are some areas in California where their employees are essentially homeless during the week. And just because it may take them 3 hours, like if 3 hours to commute home. So they're living in their cars. And I believe that maybe they had allowed, and I want to say that Colorado did this as well, that they may have allowed campsites. I want to say that Colorado had done that, that maybe they had some campsites on the DOT ground, and the campers would stay on location as different people retired, then others would be able to stay there. So I just, there are a lot of opportunities, and people really do need to think outside of the box in what we've always done. You said it. If you do what you've always done, you'll get what you always got. And if it's not enough, if that's not enough, you got to switch it up a little bit, do something different.
Right. Right. Because ultimately at the end of the day, our customers are going to want those roads cleared.
Right. They're not taking it lightly on us just because we're understaffed. Right. They don't care. They just want the services.
Safety and mobility. I mean, that's why we're here.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
Sandy, anything you want to say about your glorious 36-year career at the Maryland Highway Agency?
You know, just
State Highway Agency.
Answering that ad was actually the best thing that, you know, I mean, I got kids and they're awesome too, but answering that ad when, you know, I was just I had decided I wasn't going to college right out of high school. I did end up getting a degree through the state that, you know, they helped pay for my education. I wouldn't have known about that had I not walked in the door. Mm-hmm. And I've loved every single job that I've had all along the way. It's been good to me. And I am looking forward to the next chapter, but I don't want to, leave knowing that there's like this looming list of problems that these agencies are going to face in, you know, the coming years. I don't like doing that and not being able to help in some way. So I honestly do thank you for allowing me to come on, and I hope that I've given, I don't know, someone, one person, if they manage to make it through this whole podcast, if, you know, one person an idea about, okay, maybe we can't do this, but hey, what about this? So I do mm-hmm. hope. And actually, I'd love to see pink plows all across the country.
Well, you know what, Sandy? I've known you for a long time, and it's just been a joy working with you. I enjoy every interaction that we've had. Your smile and your positive attitude is just like infectious.
Thank you. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to be completely professional or my normal self.
Well, we do build the podcast as a conversation, right? That's what it is. Sandy, what I will do in the show notes for this, I will post the link to the No Boundaries report.
Oh, perfect.
The final report. So folks, if we've piqued your interest in any of these things that other states are trying, I encourage you to go out, pull that link up and check it out, see what No Boundaries is all about, see what kinds of strategies that folks, you know, workarounds, find out what kind of workarounds that they're trying to employ to get employees. So anyway, Sandy, thanks a million for being on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Rick. Take care.
If you've liked this episode, share it with your colleagues, and while you're at it, Click subscribe on your content provider so you'll never miss an episode. If you'd like me to send you an email letting you know when the next episode gets posted or be in other communications with the Winter Weather Management TSP, you can sign up at subscribe.talkinwinterops.org. Sign up today so you can get all the communications Talkin' Winter Ops firsthand. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at TalkinWO. This podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation out there across the nation, thank you very much, Sandy, and the Maryland DOT, that make a $4,000 contribution to support the AASHTO Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, which is formerly known as SICOP. It's because of your support that Talkin' Winter Ops and all the other resources from the Winter Weather Management TSP are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. And here's the sign-off, Sandy. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there. Now it's your turn to say it.
Thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.
Perfect.